Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's time for Point Taken. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Bry.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Tuesday.
Happy Tuesday.
Yeah, you have to think about it. I actually made a mental note in my brain just to not say Monday over and over again. Because, you know, for us, it feels like a Monday, right? Because we haven't done a show yesterday.
I have absolutely no idea what it was, because day it is, because I left Thursday afternoon to go to Minnesota. So then Friday felt like a Saturday. Then we drove back on Saturday. And then we had like an extra Saturday. It was like I was all over the place. So I'm still, even today, I'm like, I have a lot to get oriented in my brain as we get back into a very, very heavy news day.
Yeah, and I was completely, like, I didn't have internet service for a lot of the weekend because I was up at my in-laws' cabin in the northern part of the state, Mercer, Wisconsin, to be exact. And I spent some time in Minocqua, had a lovely dinner there at North Fork, which was amazing. So
were you paying attention Friday night?
Friday nights.
This last Friday. So were you, is this when you were in?
No, I was already gone.
So you were already gone. You had no internet service. I was at a wedding. I had no internet service. So apparently we both were MIA when those 12 hours of the internet assuming or thinking or some hoping that the president was no longer with us.
Yeah, this is nuts to me.
It's crazy as far as how, I mean, I saw something. It was over 40, thousands of posts on X were shared featuring hashtags including Where is Trump and Trump died, posts speculating that Trump's possible demise had acquired over 1.3 million user engagements as of Saturday morning. That was just on one app, let alone all of them.
So I guess the obvious part of this is why people were wondering this is because he had been to a cabinet meeting. I actually talked about that on Friday. And had no public events over the entire weekend.
Now, there were 7 days that people didn't see him.
Now, and here's the weird part, and this is, you and I were talking about this before the show. Are we being trolled by the White House? Is sort of my question. Because he's scheduled, the President of the United States, to speak at, I think, 1 p.m. our time this afternoon on this idea of moving Space Command from Colorado Springs to Alabama. Certainly, there's just a lot of attention about changing the Defense Department to the Department of War.
Feels weird because isn't he the anti-war guy?
That's what he tells. He hates war. He does not like war. So that's sort of an interesting one. All this weird stuff, something about Walter Reed and the roads being closed. They're going there today. All of these questions about where he is, what he's doing, some weird.
How he's feeling.
Yeah. So weird White House posts where they show pictures supposedly this weekend. But then when someone did some Googling research, the images were actually from a year ago. Like golfing on like with stuff behind him that was there a year ago. So there's just a lot of weirdness about this story. I guess we'll find out at 1 o'clock this afternoon.
And how he looks.
Yeah,
he looks healthy.
You see the images? One, he looked like he had a shaved head. The other one, he had some big thing right in the middle of his forehead, like a swelling.
Then there was a weird video of people throwing something outside of the White House, and then the expectation or like the knowledge that since 9/11, all of the White House windows have been like sealed shut with bulletproof glass. There's just a lot of weirdness, and that I think if you're not chronically online, even the attempt to summarize everything that feels like happened on this weekend is discombobulating.
So I'll ask you: do you think we're being trolled? You think he's just fine, and all this other stuff's nonsense?
I mean, do I think he's fine?
Well, he has some health.
Is he 78 or 79 now?
I think he's 79.
He turned 79 in June?
Yeah.
And so, I mean, does he look the healthiest he's ever looked?
No, he looks unhealthy.
So as far as, is he fine? I don't know. Is he alive? I think he is alive.
Yes, I think he's alive, yes.
And
I hope he's alive. No one wants the president to die in office.
So I was thinking about this as far as the reaction. And maybe this was just the internet being the internet. But not just unique to Trump of being such a polarizing figure. But I think the same reactions would probably erupt if we had known more about all of Biden's health issues while he was in office. Like, do you think we'll ever have a president again where the sanctity of the office creates people to have reverence for that person and like his health, his or her health, versus half of the country being titillated by the idea that they might have died?
Yeah, I saw people cheerleading it on social media.
That's what I mean. Like, have we moved beyond? Is this a Trump thing, or is this just how polarized we are now that no matter who's in that office, half the country is going to hate them?
I don't know what the number is, but I was going to say half the country loves the president, half the country hates, but that's not actually correct anymore. So there's a significant number of both sides who absolutely hate the other side. Would you agree with that one?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know what that number is, and it could be higher on one side. I have no idea. It's sort of an interesting time because this White House, Caroline Leavitt, White House press secretary, have put the stamp of, they say, complete transparency. But I don't feel like we got complete transparency in the last week. Now, they put out a crazy video on YouTube about an hour. The president's, what is his, top 11 lessons of life? What are you telling us? That came from a White House account. What are you telling us today?
Yeah, but the White House account that has been trolling everyone. I mean, this is also the same White House account that's been like ASMR deportation videos where they're like chains clinking and people getting handcuffed. So like it's the account I would not say is a serious account anymore.
And I had a conversation yesterday at the Lions Fest, which I talked about on Friday. Actually, we talked about it last week too. On how much we are told now you can't trust anything, like FBI, CIA, government, AI, whatever it is. So why in the hell would I trust this White House to tell us anything? Are they like exempt from that crazy weirdness that we can't trust anything, or are they just playing the game? A part of me feels like they're playing the game. They like this stuff. It's sort of like how Bill McCosh approaches it. He likes to tweak everybody, right? On our little text exchanges, he likes to tweak us, right? All this positive news. I have no idea if the president is healthy or not healthy, what's ailing him. I know a little bit about that. It's just something doesn't look right to me. And if you're going to be transparent, maybe today, because if he does a live presser where he's sitting at his desk or standing at a podium, it's hard not to be able to assess his condition, right? Because I'm guessing he's not going to have a hat on. Okay, so that'll, whatever's going on with his head or his hair, that'll be recognizable. His mannerisms, his speech, all those things will be immediately recognizable as this was the old Trump or there's something going on here. And all this hyper-focus to sort of put a ribbon on this part of this conversation is all, in my opinion, because of what happened at the end of the Biden presidency. We didn't know. Like, how sharp is this guy? And from all accounts, he's doing fine today, even though he's, you know, been diagnosed with a serious issue. I have no idea what to trust anymore. Texter says, does not mean they are transparent. It's just gibberish. A lot of it is gibberish. Caroline Leavitt is she might as well be on the campaign. I mean, that's what she does as press secretary. Not that they all don't do that, but literally, she's just rubber stamping whatever comes out of the mouth of the president, which I guess is their job, right?
Is it their job?
I don't know.
Is their job? I thought their job was, I mean, obviously you are a representation of the administration, but the job is not just to like spin control. It's also to communicate to the press as far as the actions of the administration.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you have to play that line. You got to support the president, but too, you got to tell the truth. She doesn't tell the truth. And just for the hell of it, because I feel like it, after the break, I'm going to just give you some things the president has spoken on recently, and maybe I'll do it at the last segment of this hour, that are completely false, but he continues to say them out loud, either in his Truth Social posts or in person before his disappearance, air-quoting disappearance. It's an interesting time for the office of the president of the United States.
It's an interesting time in general.
Yes, Kristen Steve. Point taken on this Tuesday edition. We'll be right back on 620 WTMJ. What the hell is going on in the office of the president today? I guess we'll get some of our answers this afternoon. The president's scheduled to speak at 1 p.m. I would, if I was doing my show, I'd probably carry that live just to hear what the heck he's saying.
Do you think?
Yes, I always think.
No. But as far as the, not support, because I think everyone who supports the president. But as far as so much, I think of this administration, his second term so far has been marked by how public he's been, how much he's in front of, he's meeting with the press all of the time. You know, he's doing Trump-like things. And I think regardless of his age, people are attracted to him because of his strength, because of his unapologetic nature, as far as how he talks. If he did have any kind of health concern over the weekend that diminishes how he presents publicly, do you think people change their attitude about him? Or do you think that they stand by regardless of how he presents?
I mean, if there's something wrong with the president?
So, I don't want to, how do I say this without creating any kind of false speculation of what happened?
Well, we know you're speculating.
Let's say, like, have you ever known anyone who's had a stroke?
Yes.
A stroke that they survive?
Yes.
So you know, they have to go through some certain physical therapy depending on if it affects their dexterity and their hands or their speech or something. But like they're alive, they're fine. But there are certain things that happen as far as what they can and cannot do as they try to recover from the stroke. So I'm not saying anything like that happened. But if something were to happen where it affects his, he's alive, he can do the job, but physically he looks different and he talks differently than he has in the past. Do you think no matter what, MAGA and Republicans are like, he's the guy? Or do you think there starts to be a, what is the word that I want? Like a slipping away as
slippage,
far as—
slippage, right? So they're pulling back.
Yeah.
That's a great question. I think there would be some of that because, let's be honest, all the people that voted for Donald Trump aren't 100% Donald Trump fans. They're just, the alternative was Kamala Harris. They said, no thanks, we're going for Trump. Whatever this is, and part of it's just aging. He's 79 years
old.
I think the public has a right to know. Now, here's where it gets interesting for me. Because what I've seen of his administration, his support staff, and everything around him for the last decade plus, a part of me thinks, and I don't know, I haven't any evidence of this at all, that if there's something seriously wrong with him, they're not going to tell us. That's what I feel today.
So it's just Biden again?
It's like, 2.0. Yeah, exactly. Only on the other side of the aisle. And I don't.
Which also isn't the first time this has ever happened, right? FDR was in a wheelchair.
And no one knew.
I mean, by the end of Reagan's administration, isn't there a lot of speculation as far as how he was doing? And so it's not the first time there's been a little bit of a cover-up of how the president's doing.
And here's the other thing, because you and I were talking about AI a lot sort of off show recently. How much of these, like there's an image of Trump with this weird thing on his forehead. Is that AI? Is that real? There's a weird image of Trump from last week where he has like no hair on the back of his head. Is that AI or is that real? I have no idea. And because AI is so good now, I don't think most people that don't work in that field or that area would have any idea if it's real or not until they do what I say, which is anything that's AI, just branded AI, so we never can be fooled again, which I think is what has to happen because it's getting too good. I have no idea. Here's the thing. The president has an opportunity this afternoon at 1 p.m., 2 p.m. our time, to put himself out there. But to disappear, this president to disappear for what is now almost a week? Something's not right.
When was the last time in modern history that we didn't hear, I mean, in the last 10 years?
Well, Biden disappeared for a while.
No, I'm talking about Trump specifically.
Oh, Trump, no.
Trump wasn't on TV in some way or another for 7 full days.
Yeah, it's been a while. It's such a fascinating, fascinating look at how we view that office, how politics has shaped us, how the internet, social media, AI is sort of reshaping all that, our consumption of these things. You were talking about all these things that are just spinning out of control, all these conspiracy theories and all the other things and people's reaction to whatever they're seeing or hearing. It's nuts. And I'm going to go back to what I said before. I'm a guy who listens to the person that's in charge. All right, so tell me, so I know you're good. So when I watch the president this afternoon or listen to him.
You don't trust his Truth Socials?
No. And this is why this is crazy. So here's just a quick rundown. I know we got to get to break here. These are just the things in the last week or so he said that are completely false. In many places in the country, there's $2 or less, $2 a gallon gas. There's nowhere in the country that has $2 or less gas, unless you have a coupon.
Yeah, I drove in today. It was $3.30.
Yeah. It's impossible to have a 1,500% reduction on prescription drugs. The maximum is 100%. Because that would be free. Anything beyond that, they're paying us to take the drug. Everyone understand that? There's no 1,500% reduction. It's 100, which is free. Anything more than that, they're paying us to take the damn drug. That's something he said out loud last week. He keeps talking about no inflation. Not true. You look at all kinds of different price indexes. They're all sort of stuff. Mail-in voting. Falsehoods on who does it. Whether it works or not. All those things are false. He said it over and over again. He's signed an executive order on it. His issues with Los Angeles and the water, he didn't do anything with the water. That's all BS. 2020 election, again now, we're being told it's all fake. Apparently, he's going to sign another executive order related to elections, voter ID in every state. Again, states control elections. You can't just say stuff. I was going to use a different word. All the things he's been talking about lately, all of them are false. You have a president of the United States who's supposed to be the most trusted, most respected person in the country. That's the ideal. This is not that. That gives me pause. I, like you, all of you, most of you, will be listening and watching, hopefully, the President of the United States this afternoon. Put all that stuff to bed. Put it to rest. If he doesn't, it's going to get crazy up in here. It's going to be nuts. If he's got something wrong with him, whether it's serious, if he announces any of that, what we're being told is it's Space Command moving to Alabama. It's maybe an executive order.
Defense Department of War,
which makes no sense given what he said previously. Again, another misstatement. I don't know. That's what's coming this afternoon.
I mean, what this is really about is to, I guess, put all of the rumors to bed, I have to imagine. Because none of those things seem like, I don't know, a big deal where we're all going to be tuning in see what he has to say about these things. Like, yeah. None of those feel like huge announcements, but everyone's going to tune in and be like, what does he look like?
Yeah. Maybe that's the hook. Maybe he wanted to.
Yeah. That's the press.
Yeah. So I guess we're all going to find out together. Lots more on the show today. We got a live guest coming up in a little bit.
We do.
Yeah. I think she's here.
That's after the break, though. That's talking about the other news.
Talking some Wisconsin politics. We got a quick segment after the break here on 620 WTMJ. Oh, good musical choice there. Anyway, we're going to find out this afternoon. Anyway, one of the things that the news that broke over the weekend. Yeah, many things. Was this story from the president himself, I think on Truth Social, that he's going to honor Rudy Giuliani, America's mayor at one point, now sort of shamed and disbarred in several states because of his actions during the 2020 election aftermath. Going to honor Rudy Giuliani with a Presidential Medal of Freedom. And I would say,
I have really mixed feelings on this.
I do too. He deserves it for his work after 9/11.
And he took down the mafia. Like, there's a lot of stuff that he did earlier in his career that deserves to be recognized.
Yeah.
And yet the fall from grace as far as, you know, he's had a series of legal and financial issues that have, like, he's filed for bankruptcy. He's been criminally charged in Georgia and Arizona. I saw him briefly at the RNC because he has his podcast or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't come across as the most stable, like mentally stable individual anymore. But at the same time, you can't take away the things that he actually accomplished. So no. I have very mixed feelings as far as how this goes.
Yeah. On his overall work product, I'd probably give him the Presidential Medal of Freedom. It's not the most controversial one I've ever seen.
That's true.
Yeah. So we'll discuss that after the break for news. Let's talk to a state senator from the state of Wisconsin. I've never interviewed her before, have you?
I have not either.
Okay. Well, we'll meet a state senator from the state of Wisconsin after the news, which is next, coming up here now from ABC. Thanks for finding us on your busy post Labor Day Tuesday morning here on 620 WTMJ Point Take. And she's Chris and I'm Steve. I've never talked to our next guest other than a brief hello last week. She's State Senator Dora Drake. Welcome to the studio.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, you were appearing on one of our other stations, I think The Truth. So much to talk about, but you're sort of getting back in, hopefully back into session at some point here, right?
Yeah.
That question's still out there, right?
It is still out there. So I was just telling Kristen before we went on air how this week, I know the Judiciary and Public Safety Committee and the Health Committee will be meeting because I'm on those committees. So I know
there's on my schedule.
Yep. So tomorrow I'll be in Madison for those committees. But in terms of when we're actually going to be back in session, that's the biggest question. And, you know, I think it's this weird space where people are like, okay, we passed the budget. Now what? And I think part of the reason why things are moving way slower than they should be is because I do think Republicans know that their time's up. And so,
interesting.
Well, think of it this way. We know that next year's midterm elections, right? And I know in the Senate we have a real opportunity to get the majority. And same in the Assembly. And now there's the governor's race that everyone's thinking about and talking about. And so there is an opportunity for Democrats to get the majority. But because of that, I think people might be a little worried of maybe moving things slower than necessary.
Since you brought it up. What would that, if there was a takeover, your word, what would that feel like if Democrats had the controlled the sessions, controlled what you're talking about, controlled the committee assignments? What would that feel like? Because it's been a while.
It has been. And honestly, I think we finally be able to push the things that people in Wisconsin have been fighting for, you know, whether that's gun safety legislation, whether that's collective bargaining rights for labor. You talk about healthcare. There's so many things that Democrats have stood on that we would actually find ways to put forth in Wisconsin. And so that's the exciting part for me. The hard part is, okay, we know we have this opportunity. We just need to do the work, get the vote out, and then make sure we keep it when we get there.
So that I have to imagine that's part of the reason why the Black Legislative Caucus has announced that they're doing a listening tour. They're doing a bunch of town hall halls this month. And so how much of that is a reaction to what happened last fall or this spring of past elections versus looking ahead into next spring and next fall as far as wanting to get out of Madison or out of Milwaukee and actually meet people where they're at?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of all those things. I don't think it was a one situation that happened. You know, obviously with last year, you know, Wisconsin did have some of the highest voter turnouts from Black voters, and we saw them Milwaukee as clear as day. But there is, I think, a national discussion. I mean, the polls share how, you know, Democrats are doing poorly in the polls too. So I think part of that is this disillusionment about, okay, we show up time and time again because we believe in the things that you guys fight for, but what do we get in return for it?
Yeah.
And so part of that is response to what's happened last year. You know, we've had mixed feelings about the budget. And we said, look, we want to make sure that we take action and we're responding to the issues that you've brought forward to us. And that's really why the Legislative Black Caucus announced a tour of all these different listening sessions. Because, yes, the majority of Black Wisconsinites are in Madison and Milwaukee. But there are communities that, you know, are in Wisconsin, and we want to make sure that we hear their voice too. And
as you go on this listening tour, we were told during the election, the run up to November, that it's the economy, household budgets, and crime. Do you buy into that those are still the things that people are talking about and want to hear from their elected representatives about?
I think that's definitely part of it. You know, household-ish kitchen tables, right? Because people are still talking about, look, childcare is still expensive. How can I choose between making sure my kids are in childcare versus still keeping a job versus now, you know, feeling safe? I think those are just your bread and butter issues. I think what's nuanced for Black Wisconsinites is those are issues that we have been pushing for. And those are things that we haven't really seen to what it could be. For example, if you look at Wisconsin, we still have the highest low unemployment rate for Black Wisconsinites, even though we're doing great in other sectors. And so there's a question of saying, look, we want to work. We want to provide for our families, but somehow there's something that's missing there, right? And I think what you're seeing nationally is not just the employment piece, but really the erasure of our own history too, you know, and so and measures of trying to ensure that our history is still funded, you know, that goes into education, right? We know that there still can be more done, you know, investing in our public schools, but ultimately making sure that our Black children can read and write. And so really it's hearing the issues that people want to bring forward to us so that we can actually create a policy agenda that's reflective of the issues that people are bringing to us and bringing to our attention.
Do you expect they're going to hear anything that you don't already know?
You know, I don't know, but I think that's what makes me excited about it.
Yeah.
You know, as leaders, you know, obviously it's our job to always hear from our constituents on what those issues are. And obviously they tell us because they want us to bring a solution, find a way to fight for it. But even in that, sometimes we don't always get it right. And so I'm sure there are some things that we will hear that we're like, yeah, we knew that's probably something that we still need to work on. But maybe there might be other issues that we had no clue.
We're on Point Taken Tuesday edition. Kristen and Steve talking to State Senator Dora Drake. We're continuing the conversation, including the exodus of young Black males to Donald Trump, the current president of the United States, and what you think that meant or said. Mm-hmm. We'll discuss that and a lot more with our guest on Point Taken on 620 WTMJ. Continuing our conversation with State Senator Dora Drake, joining us in studio on this Tuesday edition. Kristen Bry, Steve's Committee Point Taken, 620 WTMJ. I mentioned before the break, one of the big things that happened in the November election was a lot of young Black men sort of switched their party or switched their affiliation and voted for Donald Trump. What do you make of that? It's just a one-off? Is it a trend worth watching?
Yeah. So, and it's a good point that you brought up. I will say what's unique, at least in Wisconsin, was that I actually saw more Black men come out for Kamala Harris. So I do want to set that record. But there is something to be said about having younger Black men sort of switch over. And I think there's a couple of reasons for that. One, like I said, I mentioned the unemployment rate. You know, that is an issue where if you're talking about economics, you know, that's an issue that I think Black men sort of just gravitate to because, you know, culturally, people want to be able to provide for their families. And so when you have someone as our president is, just this cavalier sort of like no nonsense. I'll say what I say, regardless if, you know, I'm being rude or not. It's sort of attractive in that way because people are sort of just seeking the real. So I think that's just not even for black men, but I think that's just in general, because I would say, I think if the numbers are correct, that I think there's usually just a trend for younger men in general.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
it's something
absolutely.
Where I think as a party, we need to figure out like what it means for us to like really ensure that we care about labor rights, but making sure that we're giving people the fair economic opportunity, whether it is to not only start a business, but actually support your small business and ventures, but also as a worker too, because not everyone's going to start a business, and making sure that those options are available for them.
So you've been in, we were just talking at the break that you first got elected in 2020 to the Assembly. Mm-hmm. You're now in the State Senate. So you mostly have only been able to work in the minority
right.
in the state legislature. But as a lifelong Milwaukeean, when you hear the issues that the black community, let's say just in Milwaukee, is dealing mm-hmm. with, how much do you feel like is things that could get solved statewide in the legislature mm-hmm. versus working at the county level, working at the city level? Like what, like when you see the landscape, where do you feel like the limitation is for what you and the Legislative Black Caucus can do mm-hmm. versus pointing people back in the direction of the Common Council or right. the county executive?
Right. So, I mean, a big part of this is funding and resources. Yeah. You know, I know that with, I think it's Act 12. Yeah, with Act 12, I know that was the start of getting some more resources back to Milwaukee, the city and the county. But even in that, you know, it wasn't to where they could be to be sustainable, right? And, you know, the whole state knows that Milwaukee is the economic engine for our whole state.
I hope they know that. They
well,
should.
I don't know if they do know that. But.
Well, you know, and I think that's part of the frustrations that maybe some of us as lawmakers have is because obviously you have your urban areas in the state, so that's Milwaukee and Madison, and even Green Bay, because obviously they're like growing as well. But then you have your
rural. We're seeing in Kenosha.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
exactly.
You know, like, there's pockets of.
There are. I think it's really, and I hate to say it, but I think a turf war in a way of just like, okay, well, whoever has the most resources sort of controls how things are determined.
Mm.
And I think that's the frustration where I think some of us lawmakers just have in general. And the question really becomes, look, if you benefit Milwaukee, you benefit the whole state. And I think that really ties into the message that the caucus is trying to get out too. The issues that black folks deal with, truly, if you address them, you uplift everybody.
Well, and that was going to be one of my questions. And yeah. You kind of answered it in the last segment. It feels to me, as someone who is not black,
mm-hmm.
but so much of those issues are something like it's kitchen table issues.
Exactly.
It's the economy. It's safety. It's mm-hmm. it's like what is the unique besides racism,
right?
But like, and which you can argue is woven into everything. But mm-hmm. as far as like, what is anyone going to come to a black legislative caucus town hall that's going to be a different issue than what most of us want when it comes to a better life?
Exactly. Like, even if you take the issue of reproductive health care and abortion care rights, right? Like, those are issues that the whole state overwhelmingly agree on. If you come to one of our town halls or even some of the districts, I'm sure part of us, like, not only do we agree that we just want equity in our access to health care. So that's not even just with reproductive health care. That's making sure you have preventative services, having a doctor that actually listens to you, or you have the education necessary to actually get into the medical field.
State Senator Dora Drake joining us. Can you stick around for one more second?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. I got a question to ask you about Milwaukee, since we're sitting in Milwaukee. Everybody talks about Milwaukee.
Of course.
We'll discuss that with our guest, State Senator Dora Drake, after this on 620 WTMJ. Thanks for joining us on this Tuesday. We are joined in studio by State Senator Dora Drake. I asked you before the break, Kristen and I get a lot of texts, hundreds if not thousands of texts during a two-hour program. A lot of them are Milwaukee-focused, right? Mm-hmm. And we had the weekend of these, you know, street takeovers. We've talked about police and hiring issues and concerns. And I wanted to get your thoughts on this sort of this idea that some people have, which I think is misguided, that Milwaukee is not a safe place to live, work, play. I would completely disagree with that as someone who does all three things in this community. But you're a state senator.
Right.
You're born and raised, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What's your reaction when you hear those comments?
You know, I understand the concern, but there's a lot of great things happening. And I'll just address, you know, the street takeovers, and there was news about, you know, the National Guard coming in. Look, y'all. having the National Guard does not promote public safety. Let's just keep it a buck. It's because a lot of the things that we could have to address public safety, we need to have proactive measures. And those are things that, you know, the Republican legislature just hasn't been doing, you know, to the best that we could do. Now, there's a piece of legislation that I've been working on, which is speed safety cameras. And so that is a tool that can be used. And thankfully, we have bipartisan support, and we're trying to see if we can get it through.
So that's different than red light cameras.
Yes, they're similar. So it's photo booths also only acted out once you're actually going 15 miles over the speed limit. And we've had parameters in there. But Milwaukee is a city with a lot of hidden gems. You know, we have, as Milwaukee, we're the city of festivals where everyone comes around the world, whether it's Harley Fest, Summer Fest. And there's a lot of culture that's here as well. Now, can we address the haves and have-nots? We should. But that doesn't mean that we throw out the bad water with what's good, you know.
Would you support getting the Milwaukee Police Department hiring back to their levels that they say they need? Because that's been a big discrepancy. I think we're talking about 100 or more jobs, maybe 200.
Well, I have concerns about that just because with Act 12, there was already provisions where the city has to hire more law enforcement.
Right.
So the city spends a good chunk of their budget on law enforcement. There are other things that we could do to promote public safety, which would be, you know, what are we doing for our health, you know, mental health, and even sort of like the traffic, you know, measures that I mentioned earlier. So and I get our law enforcement, they go through a lot, you know, with the things that they see day in and day out. But having law enforcement as the sole issue to address the public safety issues isn't going to solve it all, you know. And I had a young man that I got a chance to meet who was in a really tough situation. But part of that, you know, and he's facing a case right now, but part of that was he was seeing domestic violence at home, you know, and so if we're really going to be serious about addressing public safety, it's having obviously law enforcement, but you need to address those things that are happening at home too.
She is State Senator Dora Drake. Thanks for spending a half hour with us.
Thank you
fascinating
for
conversation.
Me.
You're welcome to come back again.
Yeah, maybe after the town hall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Love to hear what everybody's having to say.
Sounds good.
You're listening to Point Taken, hour number one in the books. Hour two coming up after this, which is news right on 620 WTMJ.
Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's time for Point Taken. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Bry.
Welcome back to the 11 o'clock hour of the Tuesday edition of Point Taken. And since we usually on Mondays have a update from Annex Wealth Management, we're moving it to Tuesday because too much happening. So from Annex Wealth Management, Brian Jacobson is on the phone with us. Brian, how are you doing today? How was your long weekend?
Oh, it was fantastic. How was yours?
It was good. There was a wedding involved. There was a Brewers game involved. Lots of things. It was very fun. But fall is coming.
All right, Brian, so let's get right to it. So while we were all having fun over the weekend, I think it was Friday, late Friday, the tariffs were struck down by a federal court, although they did postpone any enforcement or any rollback until the higher court could act on it. I guess the obvious question, what happens next, is I think how we'll start.
Yeah, it was a little annoying to see that come through at, I think it was 5:30 when I got the news alert that the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit, they upheld the ruling, or most of the ruling, from the Court of International Trade. And the Court of International Trade, that's the body that said that President Trump can't use, it's called IEEPA, so that International Emergency Economic Powers Act, that he can't use that to impose tariffs. He can use it for all sorts of other things, but it doesn't allow for the use of tariffs. And the Court of Appeals basically said, yep, we agree with them on that part. However, the big question is, does this apply just to the people who brought the case to the court? Or is this one of these nationwide injunctions that they can impose? Because as we know, with the birthright citizenship argument, the Supreme Court has already said, you know, courts can't just say, okay, you can't impose tariffs universally, right? Maybe it applies only to the parties who brought the case. Maybe it only applies to their particular district. And so that's why the Court of Appeals said, this is going to go back down to the Court of International Trade to make that determination. But before that happens, maybe President Trump and his team, they're going to try to appeal that ruling to the Supreme Court. So they have until October 14th, because they did put a stay on eliminating those tariffs until then.
So nothing actually changes for the public as of right now. But, right? And so then what are the chances, so if this goes up or goes down, that the government's going to have to pay back this money to companies? Is that an option on the table?
It is an option on the table. And that's one of the reasons why maybe we see today in the markets, bond yields are moving up. Now, there's also some international factors at work here. In France, they're having a few issues as far as the stability of their government. You also had some inflation data in the United Kingdom. So kind of globally, yields moved up, and then it's an interconnected world. So ours move as well. But one of the contributing factors to this move up in yields, which could affect mortgage rates, pushing those slightly higher, is the idea that maybe the government has to refund all of this money that they have been collecting. Most likely they would, just because if it wasn't legal to collect it, what should allow the government to then keep it? But before that happens, it's entirely possible that the Trump team is just going to pivot to using other government powers that have been more tested, where they have this thing called Section 122 powers, where they can basically say for 150 days, we're going to apply 15% tariffs. Okay, so the law clearly allows for that. They didn't use that power, but maybe they'll pivot to that, and then they'll use what's called their Section 232 tariffs, sometimes called sectoral tariffs. That's what they used in order to apply tariffs to, say, autos, aluminum, different items like that. So it has to be more of a fact-finding mission that they go on, where they have to have public hearings, and then they can impose the tariff. So they'll probably just pivot to using some other power, in which case then maybe they get to keep the money. So we'll really have to see how this plays out.
And it's Wealth Management's Chief Economist Brian Jacobson joining us on Point Taken on this Tuesday. Lots of conversations among some of the other big countries in this world, India, China, Russia. Is this an alliance that should give us pause, raise our red flags, concerns that they're getting pretty close, and so much of this stuff is now related to the digital currencies and all the other ways we look at finances? What do you think?
Yeah, I do think this is something we really need to closely monitor. We know for a long time that Russia and China, that they had a little bit more cozy relationship than what maybe we were comfortable with. But now India has run into their arms as well. Or I guess there was a picture of Prime Minister Modi of India hugging President Putin in Russia. So they've run into each other's arms in a way. And that's not really a good look. You know, and the extent to which is it that the 50% tariffs on India, because they continue to purchase oil from Russia, that's the reason why President Trump imposed those. Did that help kind of draw those parties closer together? You have the fastest growing population in India, also the largest population in India. China's population is declining, but still very large. And, you know, geographically, they're all very close. Economically, they're becoming more intertwined. And, you know, is this a growing type of almost like another Cold War type of environment where, but this one, instead of being maybe based on military, it could be based upon, like, you know, cyber attacks and things like that. So something that we definitely need to really pay close attention to.
Brian Jacobson joining us from Annex Wealth Management. We'll take a quick break here. Lots more to talk about. Could there be some news from the Fed? Obviously, everyone's pointing to the maybe potential rate cuts. We'll ask Brian about that and a whole lot more after this on Point Taken on 620 WTMJ. Oh, we love that music. Even when it's a Tuesday.
Even when it's a Tuesday, we are talking to Annex Wealth Management's Chief Economist, Brian Jacobson. All right, so what new updates do we have, the ongoing drama for the Fed board?
Gosh, yeah, isn't that, it's really kind of, they could be a made-for-television movie kind of thing about all of this. You know, we do have this upcoming week, now that the Senate is back in session, they are supposed to be having these confirmation hearings for Stephen Miron, who he is currently on the Council of Economic Advisors for the president. He was tapped to become the, perhaps the next board member taking over from Kugler, who she went back to go teach at the end of August, or actually at the beginning of August. economist at Georgetown University. So there was a vacancy there, and he was the one who was tapped to really take over that role. We'll have to see what happens there in terms of the confirmation hearing. What are his views? We kind of know them. He's been very public about it, so no big surprises there. But now it's that whole drama with Lisa Cook from the Federal Reserve Board. And the judge on Friday, it was a little disappointing that she didn't actually rule on the temporary restraining order to give clarity as to, is she actually on the board or not? I think everybody would have appreciated that. They're holding more hearings today. There's some filings that are taking place. So hopefully within the next 24 hours, we'll get a little bit more clarity about whether or not there'll be another vacancy that needs to be filled, because they do have a meeting coming up here. September 16th and 17th is the next meeting of the Federal Open Market Committee. And it would be good if they were playing with a full deck finally.
And from what, no matter who's sitting there, do you feel like we're finally going to see a rate cut, looking at where the cards are right now with so many different things in the economy?
Yes. Whether it is with, you know, two vacancies on the board or just one, it does seem like the majority view on the Federal Open Market Committee, because there's a total of 12 of them, seven that come from the board, five that come from the regional banks. And you do just need a majority in order to rule here. And really, with the six or seven people that we've heard speaking who are voting members, it looks highly likely that they will cut by at least 0.25 percentage points. In fact, when we look at the markets, what they're pricing in, it's like a 92% probability that they're actually going to cut rates by 25 basis points. The data we got this morning from the Institute of Supply Management from on the manufacturing side showed that there is still price pressure, right, due to tariffs, also commodity prices, all sorts of weather-related things, but that price pressure has eased a little bit, which might make the Fed a bit more comfortable cutting into that going into the September 17th announcement.
That leads me to this question, and Chris and I were talking about this earlier. It's sort of, I call them doom and gloomers. There's a lot of different names, and you probably have a name for these people at Annex where everything is negative.
Well, not negative. So I am...
Could be negative.
There is a couple people in my life who are bracing, because from the information they're getting, they feel like something bad is going to happen. Like, something crashed. They feel like it feels like 2008, again, as far as what the tea leaves feel like. And bracing for making sure all debt is paid off, bracing for savings, whatever that looks like. And so I guess for people who are feeling uncertain, what would your advice be?
Yeah, I guess it would be to maybe calm down, take a few deep breaths, right?
I love it.
Do a little bit of mental health here. But I sometimes refer to them as chicken littles, where they run around all the time thinking that the sky is falling. And maybe at some point they will be right. They have been in the past when you think about COVID, that suddenly happening, the global financial crisis. But we've recovered from those, thankfully, right? I mean, maybe it's just by the grace of God that we recovered from those events. But when you're running around thinking that these, we sometimes call them bear case scenarios, where it growls and it's, you know, very kind of really ominous sounding, where you get these big down moves, we've recovered from them. So you can't really organize your life around these bear case scenarios. You have to have a base case, a bull case, and recognize that the future is unknown and that it does pay to prepare for, you know, different types of outcomes. But if you're constantly fixated on preparing for the worst case, you oftentimes miss out on some of the great opportunities to, you know, grow your money or to enjoy life if you're always running around worrying about the bear case scenario.
Well, if you look at the market's performance this year, many I know people, they put their money in very safe places instead of, you know, where they were before, which might have been everything from, you know, pretty safe to more aggressive. And those of us who stayed in, I guess is the easy way to put it, the unofficial term, and we did pretty well over the last few months. So, I mean, there's possibility of negatives all the time. I guess you have to understand, that's what Annex Wealth Management is so great at. When do you make your decisions? How do you decide to invest? And then ultimately how you plan for things. I think that's the messaging that I always go with.
Yeah, and I really do appreciate that. And it really is about having that balance, taking that longer-term view, not making those emotional decisions. And that's one of the reasons why we encourage everybody to work with a professional. If you are trying to do it on your own, oftentimes what we have found is people who do it on your own, they chase the latest trends, and then they end up getting whipsawed by the markets because perhaps they bought closer to the peak, and then they sold closer to the trough. And really, it's about trying to have that long-term plan to be comfortable riding through the volatility that the market is inevitably going to throw at you. And really trying to time those ups and downs is a fool's errand. It's a formula for losing money and not growing your wealth instead.
Always love you sharing your wisdom. Chief Economist, Annex Wealth Management, Brian Jacobson, smart guy. Always appreciate that, Brian. Thanks for joining us. We'll have Dave on next Monday probably. But if Dave's not available, you're always welcome.
Oh, I appreciate that. Thank you.
All right. I'll take a quick break here. Point taken. Chris and Steve on this Tuesday edition. Hope you had a great Labor Day weekend. Now it's back to work and back to talking is what we're going to do as we round out the rest of this hour before we hand it off to the midday folks right here on 620 WTMJ. Thanks for joining us on this Tuesday edition. The show's going fast today. We're going to have a really fun next half hour. Not that the show's not fun the other times too, but we had some serious conversations.
Well, last week especially, we had some serious conversations.
Yeah, very serious conversations.
Shooting in Minnesota.
To school time.
It is back to school time.
Yes.
First day of school for most kids in Wisconsin.
Yeah. You know how I know it's back to school? So on my street, I live right by a high school.
Okay.
So all summer, no cars parked on my street. As soon as the first day of school, cars lined up and down my street.
How do you like that?
It doesn't bother me because generally they're gone by three. So
okay.
Yeah. And kids got to park somewhere. I've always lived in that area, so I'm sort of used to it.
Yeah.
Somebody that would move in, they're probably like, why are all these cars here? Because it's not a busy neighborhood. It's a very quiet neighborhood. Although we've got more screaming kids lately. I could go off in a half hour on this thing. Why are kids screaming like blood-curdling screams?
What age child are we talking about?
We're talking like 8-year-olds, 7-year-olds. Like, why are they screaming like that? Would you condone that as a parent?
I need way more context.
Okay,
You're just complaining to complain right
no,
now.
No, I don't think so.
So you think there's 8-year-olds who are screaming more now than they were?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying why do kids push out blood curdling screams? No, I'm not putting up with that. I'm gonna walk away. Just kidding. All right. So interesting. Obviously, we spent all of last week talking about a school shooting, right?
Not all of last week. We spent
the last 3 days.
Thursday.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, way too much time in my point of view, my opinion. It's sort of a reality, right, of going back to school now, which is unfortunate because I can tell you when I went to school, we didn't think about this at all because it wasn't a thing. Now we do.
And even when I went to school, it wasn't a thing.
Yeah, and that's much more recent than my experience. So I guess that's the part that drives me crazy. It's the part that when people say, why are you still talking about this? Because I'm not putting up with we talk about it for a couple of days, then we just let it go. That seems silly to me and stupid.
Well, I think it's also unrealistic to think that there's not a lot of parents today who this isn't at the forefront of their minds, right? As far as the excitement that often does go with starting a new school year, there's a lot of, I have some family members who are sending their kids off for the very first time because they're starting kindergarten today. And the emotions, all the normal emotions that should go with that, of the nostalgia of your kids growing up, the excitement that it surrounds it, but the fact that we are less than a week past the shooting that happened in Minnesota, and that the amount of parents who had that on top of all the other emotions they're feeling as they drop their kids off today, I think it's you can't move past the conversation because the conversation's not over.
Yeah, and I can guarantee you, if I log into Facebook today, which is no guarantee, I will see all of the first day of school pictures for those of us who are in our community who are sending their kids to school. And so I think this has to be part of that conversation as we move forward. And we're going to explore it. We're going to continue to explore this subject because I'm not going to be one of those people who just pushes it aside. I'm not going to do it. I refuse to do it in whatever time I have left on this planet because I think that's what's been happening too much. I appreciate all the conversations online about thoughts and prayers. Appreciate the prayers. Appreciate the thoughts. But thoughts means action in my mind. Until we really do something, I'm going to keep on this, as I know you will as well. So we're gonna have some fun in the next half hour.
It was a topic we wanted to do last week.
Yes. So we're going to get to it. We got local news coming up. But right now, here's the latest from ABC. I think that's Taylor Swift.
It is Taylor Swift.
What's the, you know the name? I never know the names of any of her songs. I've heard the song. Shake It Up is
this,
the song.
This is Love Story.
Love Story.
This still is like one of her most
She's
famous
in a love
and
story.
One of her earliest songs.
We just talked about that recently.
I was going to say, we kind of talked about it recently. We missed last week's big news of them actually getting engaged.
Yes.
Them being Taylor Swift and Travis mm-hmm. Kelce. And we were going to talk about on Wednesday, not them specifically, but more the nature of parasocial relationships. Because I'm not sure there's anyone, besides maybe Donald Trump, that Americans specifically in the modern age have a parasocial relationship with than
Good
Taylor
example.
Swift,
yeah.
right?
Define it for people.
So parasocial relationship is basically when you, as an individual, have a one-way relationship with a celebrity. So like you start to think of them as people you know or even friends, even when they have no idea who you are.
Right.
Right. And Taylor Swift and certain celebrities are, you know, more traditionally, I think, who we think about this. But especially now with social media, there's a lot of people who you have these one-way relationships with, even on the small level of like you and I, right? There's people who you and I every day are part of their lives. When they listen to us,
yeah.
we share our stories, they feel like they know us. And so when they see us in public, and it's the same thing for me with all my social media stuff, when I'm talking about my life and my husband and my kid and everything, where people, I've had people admit when they've met me in person, say, I feel like I know you, but I have to remind myself that you have no idea who I am. And so it's a pretty common thing that we now do either with people online or celebrities where you feel attached to them in one way and you're rooting for their success or you defend them or whatever friendship you feel like they have with you have with them, even though they don't know who you are.
And I was just thinking about this over the weekend because that's the reality, right? You have these one-sided admiration societies where you love this individual, but they didn't know nothing about you. But here's where it gets weird, though. I think there's this weird part of social media where people, like, if they follow someone, and in some rare, like Ricky Gervais tweeted back at me once.
Really? Yeah,
probably five.
Does he follow you?
No, but I said something about him. I'm a huge Ricky Gervais fan, not surprising to most people, because I've talked about him for a lot of years. He's one of the most talented comedians in the world, and I mean that. And he answered one of my tweets, and after I talked about him, and I, you know, put him in there. But I don't have a relationship with Ricky Gervais. But it's like this weird way you can make a connection with your parasocial relationship that sort of is a nuance that we maybe don't think about. Lots of people have connected with people that way. I've had other people say, oh my God, I was having a conversation with so-and-so. They're like famous and I'm not. So that's like a weird part of the story too. So you can have some, in some extreme cases, some contact.
Some contact. But I guess it's the one, I think it's something that's been around for a long time. Think about like the fact that if you really want to go back, like people who fought for a king in the Crusades or any of these like massive wars, they never actually knew the king, like in the
never
name
saw the king.
Of someone. Right. And,
yeah.
and the willingness of, and I don't even know if it's fandom at that point, but it's a weird human relationship. So I guess, I brought this up because I typically do not have parasocial relationships where I feel invested in people who I don't know. Like I am fans of, but not as far as like.
Yeah, like if something bad happened to you, you'd feel sad or whatever. I don't have.
But
I don't
guess
think
that's
I
not
do.
Totally true because someone like when Robin Williams died, and like the impact he's had on the world. But I don't know. But I have a weird parasocial relationship with Travis Kelce's and Taylor Swift's relationship. Not either of them individually.
Right.
But like their relationship, because I feel, and we talked about this on our podcast, where I feel like it has some similar aspects. It reminds me of my marriage.
We both
talked
about
that. And
yeah.
So, and it just made me start thinking about in general, if everyone has these. So like growing up, do you feel like you had a parasocial relationship with someone where like you were very invested, like with like Bruce Springsteen?
Yeah, but not to the, like, I didn't follow
him. You weren't, like,
him
up
every
to date on his, like, love life and
no.
his legal woes
no.
as far as the protection
just,
of his
love
music,
the music
rights and everything like that. So there was not, do you feel like you have it with any of the athletes that you follow? Is there anyone who is like you feel more invested in who they are as a person and how they're doing?
No.
Without having ever met them?
Okay. I don't think I have one of these other than my.
Do you think it's more of a female thing than a male thing?
It could be. Yeah. I don't know how you would measure that other than asking females. If you're a woman out there, 855-616-1620.
Well, no, I think if anyone right now, I feel like, do you feel like you have a parasocial relationship with someone where that is a one-sided relationship? And I'm not saying it's a good or a bad thing. I think there's probably arguments, like psychological arguments of why we do this and what it does for us that we subscribe to these. But I just think it's interesting because I think Taylor Swift certainly, this is the best example of it. But there's a lot of people who I think have a parasocial relationship with Trump.
All right. I do think that's exactly right. So here's my question as two untrained medical professionals, mental health professionals, we are not that. Is it healthy? I would argue it's not healthy.
I don't know if it's, I think healthier or not healthy is too much of a binary. Is it helpful?
Or helpful?
I think that's a different question as far as what is the value it provides you besides entertainment? Like, what is the mirror that is brought up as far as your, not only just emotional investment, when it comes to any of these, going to the Eras tour, if we're talking about Trump, traveling to go to the RNC or traveling to go to any of his campaign rallies, like the actual money you put into these relationships too, sometimes if it is a musician you can see or a show you can see of some sort. But is like, is the value you get back emotionally, is there some kind of payoff there?
Is it worth it?
Yeah. I think that's a different question than healthy. Because I think to a certain extent, I don't know, what's healthy? If it's bringing you joy, isn't it healthy?
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about, I know we got to get the break. You're talking about people liking the show or liking me as a host or you as a host. And one of the common ones, and it's never intended like they say it, but, oh my God, I love you. And they'll say it like, you know, my wife's standing next to me. It's like the weirdest thing in the world. But I know what they mean, right?
Yeah.
They love the show.
They love the show.
And love what we do on the show. But it's always this weird thing, like, wow, that's the first thing you said. And here's what I do with that. First of all, I say thank you because it's awesome. Introduce my wife. And then I say, I love that you love the show. What do you like about it? And then the next question, what don't you like about it? Because I get much more usable information from that part of it.
Oh, I want to hear more about what people don't like.
Yeah. It's interesting.
Is it me?
People both love and hate you. Trust me on that. She's Chris and I'm Steve Pointaken on this Tuesday on 620 WTMJ. We're both looking at each other. Like, someone needs to talk.
Well, we will talk. But it was more of the parasocial relationship of, I don't know.
Let me do politics.
Okay. Do politics.
I think Americans, whatever your party is, whatever your ideology is, have a very unhealthy, weird relationship with their presidential candidates, their parties.
But was it always like that?
I don't know. I don't think so.
I mean, I don't necessarily know if it started with Trump. I think there's a lot of people who feel like that with Obama, right?
Sure.
I think there's
yeah.
like I think there's Absolutely. A millennial, a left leaning millennial attachment to Obama because we were, let's see, the range probably would have been like 15 to 25 ish, maybe a little bit, maybe off a little bit of coming of age, him being president, feeling like it was, you know, hope and change. And I think there's still an attachment to him like that. And since like that's basically all I can really speak to, because when Bush got, I mean, I was a freshman in high school when Bush was elected. And so I don't exactly know what the attachment was to him.
Do you think
like
you had
a parasocial relationship?
Do you think you had that kind of attachment with Kamala Harris?
No, but I also think because as I also where I'm at in my life, feel like we have to hold. These are people who work for us.
Yeah.
And it is now a weird thing because of social media and because of cable news. I think the more access we have to them as personalities is different than it was 20 years ago. And so the, you know, like the person who was in charge of her social media last summer and all of the trends and like the vibe that they were giving off of, you feel like you know this person and all, like the intentionality behind it. But if, you know, you try to take a certain reframing of that and feel like, all right, this is a politician. This is not a celebrity. This is not someone I am a fan of. This is someone who you need to hold accountable to do their job.
But those two things are blended now.
They're totally blended.
Yeah, and I don't like that. And I think I'm going to say this, and you can take it however you want. I think this fascination with political figures makes those people who do that a lot dumber, because you believe things that aren't true. You accept them. You don't challenge them. I just don't like it. And I gave you some examples of the president saying at least five things that were completely false last week. And there's not even any coverage on that anymore, really, other than a couple stories I read. Everyone's just allowed to say whatever. And I understand it's hard. We have guests on that say things that I don't agree with, but I'm not here to like call them out. That's their take on it. I get that. And when you're talking about politics, everyone has a different opinion about everything. So I understand how that works. And I understand that we're in this period of trying to figure it all out. So who has the best ideas? And I don't think anybody has the market on best.
What are you trying to make right now?
I'm trying to make the point that we're not being served by this obsession with these.
Like feeling like you have a relationship and an attachment
yeah,
to people that don't actually know, especially when it comes to politics.
It makes you just believe everything they say or trust everything they say, and that's the last thing we should do. The great thing about the media, if you want to look at the media, which we're part of, is that it sort of has changed us where advocacy journalism has sort of blended in, and now we're not challenging anybody in a real way.
I think it's different as far as what it shifted was people who want to be in politics. There's now a more perverse desire to be in politics because of the opportunity to be famous.
Yeah.
Whereas I think before social media and, you know, the cable news shows or whatever, the opportunity, I think the rich thing may have always been there, but there's just more opportunities now that come because of the attention economy that you now can, if it's not going to be an elected official, you could, I mean, what's his face still has a show, right? Gates. Right. He's like he stepped down from Congress. Mm-hmm. He didn't become attorney general. He somehow evaded any charges for sex trafficking a minor.
Yeah.
And now he still has a show and still has a following and a fandom and stuff like that. And is still making money. So I think there's still it provides opportunity that was not always there to as long as I can capitalize on people's, I don't know, desire to be attached to this profile. There's more monetary opportunity in the long run.
Here's where it gets confusing. I'm called out for both pointing out the things that aren't true and not doing it enough. So you tell me what the sweet spot of that is. What is the answer there? Because I get both. You know, it's like this weird reality we live in now. And here's the funny thing. I'll end it with this. And you hate when I do this. Reality TV has created a lot of these problems. This fixation on these couples or these bachelorettes. It's like stupid. I see people post about this crap all the time.
I don't watch that much reality TV. I feel like you think reality TV has an outsized. I think social media is way more influential than reality TV.
All I hear about reality TV. And I'll play the old man in this one. It's dumb. It's making us dumber. And frankly, if you're worried about celebrity politicians, it's only going to get worse before it gets better. Trust me on that one. All right, quick break. Kristen,
I thought
Steve.
This was supposed to be fun. This was supposed to be
it
fun
didn't turn
topic.
Out to be fun. I was disappointed in this segment, personally and professionally.
Quick All break. Right, are we talking about some Packers updates?
Let's do something real
All
fun
right, we'll
after this.
We'll do something
this.
Real fun, real short after this.
All right, real quick. My trip is rapidly selling out. It's to Cancun. Winter, come along with yours truly. Great resort. Cancun's hotel zone, Secrets Divine, is a chic contemporary escape where luxury meets tranquility. It's got the best of everything. 5-star resort. I'm not getting a tattoo on this trip. It'll be the next one, but I'm looking forward to it. Don't wait. 888. What is it? 888. Oh, I forgot the damn thing.
85. For Go Fox Go. That's meant the text line.
Yeah, Go Fox Go. Yes. Or go to foxworldtravel.com. Rose is going to
kill
kick
you.
My butt.
Rose is going to kill
kick
you.
My butt.
All right. And if you are free Thursday night, one of the things that I get to do when I'm at Journal Sentinel is moderate their Inside the Journal Sentinel events. And this one, if you are a Packers fan, is going to be very fun. So the entire Packers coverage team is going to have a live event at the New Fashion, which is right across from the Fiserv Forum, on this Thursday, 5 to 7. I am the MC. But talk to them. You're going to ask them questions about all things Packers, preseason, training camp, Micah Parsons, which we have not gotten to talk about that yet.
Yeah, it's a big deal.
Big deal.
Yeah.
It was very fun to
yes, it was.
To talk to your – I was with a bunch of my Vikings family this weekend, so that was very fun to be like, ha, honey, like that. So if you want to text Packers to 855-616-1620, it's a free event. You can RSVP there. But again, the Packers coverage team, 5 to 7 this Thursday. And you'll, if you want to meet me, if you're one of the people who actually likes me,
tell her you love her.
Doesn't hate me. Yeah. As apparently, people tell Steve that I'm divisive.
Most people don't hate you.
Okay.
Most. All right. Midday's coming up. Greg Matzik and a special guest. How about that? After the news, which is next, 620 WTMJ.